Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Shazan Shigani. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jessica. Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is IP routing QDIO devices, common configuration questions. At this time, we are currently encountering technical difficulties with the e-meeting website. Our presentation for today will make use of the PDF located online. To obtain this presentation, please go to the WebSphere Technical Exchange site located on today's presentation title. The document that displays will contain the PDF file. You may also access the presentation by going to any IBM.com site and typing the tech doc number 7009747 in the search box found at the very top of the right page. Once again, the number is 7009747. This call is being recorded. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask you to respond to a few quick polling questions. At the very end of today's session, the lines will open for a quick question and answer period. Today's presenter is Ray Koering. Ray Koering, you may start your presentation.
Good morning. As stated, we will be discussing IP routing and its relationship to QDIO devices and various common configuration questions that we have associated with that. What I intend to cover on starting page two is the background information about how internet protocols work with devices connected to the LAN. Then go into the OSA specific information about PRI router, SEC router, and non-router configurations, and how to determine which to select for your system, how it interacts with other functions available on ZOS systems, including dynamic BIPAS, Sysplex distributor, and the IQDIO interfaces. We have some newer functions also I want to cover, configuring VLAN IDs on the OSA, and the interaction with the virtual MAC feature. And I've been asked to note that most of these topics only apply to IPv4. The IPv6, you have PRI router, SEC router, non-router applies to them. Other aspects I'll mention as we go along. Okay, jumping to page four, starting in the background information. You have your basic networking models. The ISO standard model with seven layers, and I also show a rough picture of the TCP/IP model, which corresponds pretty well to what the OSI model is. You have your bottom layer, physical layer, which is the wire that you plug into your computer. Going up, you have the device, which is the network interface card, going into Ethernet protocol, and of course, token rings, you have token ring protocol at that layer. Then the IP layer starts getting into the aspects that are more visible to most of us, and transport layers, TCP, UDP, ICMP, sockets API, which is the interface that the applications have with those transport layers, and then the final application, which is what the user sees. Each layer can be viewed as communicating with that same layer on other systems on the network. Of course, actual communication starts at the top layer, goes down through all the layers, across the wire, back up through the layers. On the next page, what you have, your basic LAN with multiple devices connected to them. Only thing in between them is the cabling, and in the case of the twisted pair, and in fiber optic Ethernet, you have switches in between as well. For one LAN, all of the IP addresses use the same subnet. which means they have the IP address, the upper bits of that IP address are the same for every device connected on that LAN. And I show an example where one possible IP address masked by a 20-bit subnet mask. So the upper 20 bits will all be the same. The lower 20 bits uniquely identify that individual device. That's for IP. For Ethernet, everything has, every interface has a MAC device, a MAC address. And I show an example of that. That's unique for that each interface. And for Ethernet protocol, that's what the actual communication flowing over the wire is from one MAC to another MAC. You then have to correlate your IP address to that MAC address, and there's a protocol, the address resolution protocol, to perform that translation. When one system wants, on the next page, number 6, when one system wants to send a message to another system, the first thing it has to do is give, it has the IP address of that system. It needs to find the MAC address for it. Looks in its tables. If it already has it, it'll use it. If it doesn't have what the corresponding MAC address is, then you see the system sending out an ARP packet, and that's a broadcast. And then the system that has that IP address responds with reverse ARP packet, providing its MAC address. And then the system receiving that adds it to its table. So now it has that IP address, the MAC address translation. The message gets the Ethernet protocol added to it, as a header and potentially a trailer to pad it out to a proper length for the Ethernet. And that header then has the destination MAC address in it, as well as the sending MAC address. And so going out to through the NIC onto the physical wire will be that entire Ethernet frame. Next page, number 7. Expanding that to a broader network where you have multiple individual LANs connected via routers, the process is basically the same, except that on any one LAN, the sending system is communicating with that local router. And so what it has to look up is, given an IP address, I look up in my routing table, see that it's, I know it's not in my LAN. I look up in the routing table, see what the next hop router should be to send it on, and then perform that MAC address lookup on the router's IP address. And so the Ethernet frame that is sent out has the router's MAC in the header. The router then receives it, and it goes to forward it to the next LAN, or actually to the next hop address, which is either the destination, if that destination IP address is on that LAN, or another router to go on to the next LAN, or wide area network. And it does that same basic process again, looking up the MAC address of the next hop, wrapping a new Ethernet frame around it, sending it out. While this IP packet is in transit, all the work that we're describing here is at the IP layer or lower. You only have it looking at the IP address and also decrementing hop count, if you're familiar with that, and finding the MAC, wrapping the Ethernet frame around it, sending it out, unwrapping, and so on till it gets to the destination. The destination system then deals with all the higher level protocols. Next page. for conventional Ethernet devices, like your laptop or systems you may have at home, or even ZOS systems with some of the older interfaces, you have the software is responsible for dealing with this IP address to MAC address translation, having what's called an ARP cache associated with it, doing the ARP queries, receiving the reverse ARP responses. It is also responsible for performing the wrapping of the IP packet with the Ethernet header and trailer. The network interface is responsible for communication with the switch, negotiating things like full duplex versus half duplex, potentially speed of the communication. And then it is responsible for converting the packet into the actual electronic signal sent over the wire to the switch. On the receiving side, the signals arrive at the network interface. It puts the packet into a buffer and notifies the software that a new packet has arrived. It does that notification based off the MAC address that it's received. It's only packets that match its MAC address or broadcast MAC address or also, we didn't talk about it, but multicast has its unique MAC addresses as well. On the next page, when we're talking about OSA devices running QDIO mode in page number 9, the OSA is what handles the ARP cache, doing the IP to MAC address translation, doing the ARP queries, receiving the ARP responses. It also constructs the Ethernet header and trailer that is wrapped around the IP packet. When you have multiple stacks, or LPARs, however you want to look at it, sharing an QDIO OSA, all of the IP addresses associated with those LPARs still translate to that one MAC address, the OSA's MAC address. Individual stacks register with the OSA what IP addresses it has on its system. It also registers what multicast groups it wants to listen for. And then the OSA notifies the stack that registered a given IP address of any packet's arrival. And, of course, puts it into that LPAR's buffers. When you're dealing with multicast or broadcast, multiple stacks are notified. And note at the bottom of the page there is that the original OSAs did not forward any broadcast packets. Today, the more modern OSAs, OSA Express and OSA Express 2, have a feature that you can enable in TCP/IP to request that broadcast packets be forwarded. The next page, number 10.
Before going to the next chart, if you cannot join the e-meeting, you can still access the presentation by going to ibm.com and typing 7009747 in the search box at the very top of the page. Again, the number is 7009747. A technical document with a PDF will display. Thank you. I'll now return the presentation back to Ray.
Okay. Going on to page 11. What we discussed was where an individual system registered specific IP addresses. The question becomes, what happens when the destination address for a packet is not one of those addresses? This can occur in situations where a given LPAR has connection via other links to other systems, like say a CTC link between this LPAR and another box sitting off elsewhere that has potentially no other connection to the network. It's essentially relying on this system being a router. Well, in this case, the IP address of that remote, of that system on the other side of the CTC link is not something owned by this stack, so it's not registered with the OSA. Yet, the proper route to get to that other system is through this LPAR. In order for the OSA to know how to handle those kind of packets, that's where you get in to the specification of PryRouter, SecRouter, non-router. When you code PryRouter on the link statement for a system, that says that this stack is the one to receive all unregistered IP packets for all unregistered IP addresses. And then it will be responsible for sending it on to the next hop. SecRouter, secondary router, says, in the absence of PryRouter, I'm the one to get it. And you can configure multiple stacks to have SecRouter, and one of them, the OSA will decide which one of those to use at any time. Non-router says, I don't want to see, ever want to see any of those packets. I only want to see packets for which I've registered IP addresses. Okay, next page, number 12, and you notice I made a mistake. I said link statement. It's device statement where you specify non-router, SecRouter, PryRouter. And link statement on it, you notice I've highlighted the IP broadcast specification. So what you need to consider on page 13 is you may have statically defined routes or using dynamic routing. A given system may be specified to have routes to get to other systems or IP addresses that it doesn't own. But in order for the OSA to forward to that system, you have to have either PryRouter or SecRouter specified. All of the stacks that have either PryRouter or SecRouter need to have access via whatever the next top connection is to get to those IP addresses. The problem here is, let's say one LPAR is defined as PryRouter. You receive it, it receives an address that's not its own, so it's got to forward it. But if there's no link to forward it to, that packet stops there. It's dead. So when you decide which stacks to have PryRouter or SecRouter, the consideration is, does it have the connectivity to get to those other systems behind it? And also have note, if you have multiple PryRouter systems with PryRouter specified, only one of them will actually become, will be given PryRouter status by the OSA. Subsequent stacks attempting to register as PryRouter will get rejected. Next page, 14. Here's an example where we're following a packet to go to LPAR X. Normal process then would be packet for LPAR X's address, 1.2.3.2, arrives at the OSA. It has to decide which of the three LPARs is to receive it. LPAR 3 is up. It sends it there because it's PryRouter. And LPAR 3 has the CTC connectivity to get to LPAR X. Everything's fine. If for some reason LPAR 3 is up, but its access to the OSA is down, then the OSA will give the packet LPAR 1.2.3.2 to LPAR 2. LPAR 2 can't get directly to LPAR X. It doesn't have that CTC connection. But it can get to LPAR 3 over the IQDIO interface, so it sends it out there to targeting, effectively targeting the MAC for 1.1.10.3. LPAR 3 gets it, forwards it to LPAR X. Everything's fine. If LPAR 3 is down, that process won't even work either. LPAR 2 will get the packet, and it'll just be discarded there. Next page. If we change those configurations around slightly, LPAR 2 is the prior router, LPAR 3 the second router, then your normal operation path would be a packet arriving for LPAR X at the OSA, gets routed to LPAR 2, goes over the IQDIO interface to LPAR 3, then gets sent over the CTC to LPAR X. LPAR 2 is down, LPAR 3 is the SEC router, so it'll receive the packet directly, send it over, everything's happy. LPAR 3 is down, assuming LPAR 2 is up, it'll get the packet and it gets discarded. If both 2 and 3 are down, the packet ends at the OSA, it's discarded there. These are not conditions that create ICMP messages saying they're discarded, they're just silently thrown away. On page 16 now, Sysplex Distributor. What happens there? Well, first a little background on Sysplex Distributor. We're all familiar with having individual IP addresses for individual devices. VIPAs provide the facility for the stack to have IP addresses that are not associated with any individual device. Dynamic VIPAs means they can come and go, be moved across stacks, and then the further Sysplex Distributor, these are distributed dynamic VIPAs. Potentially every stack in the Sysplex could have that VIPA address associated with it. One of the stacks will be a distributing system. It will be the primary target for inbound packets arriving. We'll go to that LPAR. It'll decide which one of the other LPARs is to receive it, either based on existing connections or selecting based on the configured rules which stack is to receive it to start a new connection. Only this distributing stack owns the VIPA address. It's the only one that will tell the OSA about it. It's the only one that will register it. Target stacks will have the VIPA in their home list, but they will not tell the OSA about it. The conventional configuration is that the communication from the distributing stack to the target stack is over XCF interfaces. And that routing is independent of conventional IP routing. On the next page, 18, for the OSA configuration, how does specification of PRI router, SEC router, non-router affect it? The bottom line is it has no effect on Sysplex distributor functions. Arriving packets at the OSA need to go to the distributing stack. It registered it, so the rules we discussed earlier about having registered IP addresses, it'll be the one to receive the packet from the OSA. The forwarding of the packet from the distributor to the target does not involve the OSA. It's over XCF. Now, there's newer features on ZOS 1.7 and above where you can specify a Viper route statement to bypass the XCF interfaces and use conventional or conventional Ethernet connections between the systems. Those packets are encapsulated in what's called a generic route encapsulation packet, GRE protocol, which means they are wrapped with yet another layer, and the target IP address for that packet is one that the target system will have registered, so the OSA will handle it properly. The receiving system in that case will unwrap it, and it'll have arrived at the right system there, independent of how the OSA is configured. So all your stacks could be non-router, and SysFlex Distributor will work just fine. Next page, 19. Another feature that's been around for a while, added in ZOS 1.2, was communication with Cisco service managers. And this is where the distributor tells the Cisco boxes, for this given TCP connection, send the packet directly to the target system instead of going through me first. And that uses Cisco's MNLD protocol to communicate between the distributing stack and the Cisco. The individual routers, or the routers then, if you have shared OSAs, the routers need to be configured to use GRE to forward these packets. If not, what will happen if a packet arrives that has not been put into GRE encapsulation, it gets to a shared OSA, the OSA has to decide which stack to send it to. Well, the target address, the destination address, in this case, is the VIPA. If it arrives at an OSA that has the distributing stack active on it, it gets forwarded to the distributing stack. If it's not an OSA with the distributing stack, then the priRouter secRouter rules take effect. And that system then will have to forward it to the distributor so it can be forwarded to the real target. And of course, if non-router is involved, they all get discarded. That's not desirable. Next page, HyperSockets Accelerator. Page 21. The HyperSockets is a hardware feature available on ZOS systems, Z-Series systems, using what's called IQDIO interfaces. And these are actually hardware, they are chiplets whose buses are dedicated strictly for LPAR-to-LPAR communication. The IQDIO interface is another subnet. It can be viewed as another mini LAN contained totally within the Z-Series box. And you would have the priRouter, secRouter rules involved in packets arriving. They'll go to that system, and that system will put it on the IQDIO interface to the destination. If you enable HyperSocket Accelerator, the OSA will communicate directly with that IQDIO interface without going through the stacks. When your stacks come up, they register with the OSA that this subnet is associated with this IQDIO chiplet, and the OSA will forward any packets with those IP addresses to that chiplet, which will get it to the proper target system directly. That's what that function is. You enable it on the next page, page 22. You enable that capability on the IP config statement in any one of the stacks sharing the OSA that also use that IQDIO interface. Next page. VLAN IDs. Page 24. This is fairly recent. This is first a little background. VLANs have been around for quite some time. What they are in their base form is a configuration of the LAN switches that says every Ethernet frame will also be tagged with a VLAN ID. The switch will forward the packet out of a given port strictly based on is this frame tagged with a VLAN ID that this port is configured for. This provides isolation of broadcast and multicast traffic on a given subnet to just those systems that have the same VLAN ID assigned to them in the switch. The usual implementation of this is a single VLAN ID assigned to each port on a switch. It's called access mode. And in this case, a given device only sees packets that arrive for that ID. And when it sends out packets, the switch will add the VLAN ID to the frame. And the devices and associated system is totally unaware of VLAN. Next page. With this change for ZOS and some other vendors have similar functionality, what you can do is specify VLAN ID on the link statement for a given OSA. And then that communication will always use that VLAN ID. Plus, if you have the shared OSA case, potentially every LPAR could specify their own VLAN ID. They could each have unique VLAN ID. So instead of the access mode where the OSA only sees packets for one VLAN ID, this provides the ability for multiple VLAN ID traffic to be received, but they're forwarded to the attached LPARs based strictly on what VLAN ID was configured. The associated switch has to configure the port for this OSA to use what's called trunk mode, commonly called trunk mode. When you're using VLAN IDs on systems, the PRI router, SEC router functions that we describe are only within that unique VLAN ID. So given you have, say, five LPARs sharing an OSA, three of them could be configured with one VLAN ID, the other two with another VLAN ID. The first three have their own PRI router, SEC router, non-router statements. The other two have their PRI router and SEC router, and they don't interfere with each other because they are uniquely associated with the one VLAN ID. Next page. And this one shows the configuration of it on the link statement specification of the VLAN ID. There's also the keyword about dynamic VLAN registration. This is a function that some switches can provide, and the OSA will communicate with the switch, telling it, these are the VLAN IDs I want to receive. Next page. The newest feature I want to discuss is virtual MAC address, page 28. This is a facility where on the link statement for the OSA, every LPAR can specify a unique MAC address to be used for its traffic. This is a MAC address that is independent of the burned-in MAC address on the OSA. All outbound traffic from that LPAR will have as ascending MAC address the one that it put that is coded on the keyword, or potentially one automatically generated if you choose that option. This would include any ARP or reverse ARP traffic generated by the OSA on behalf of each LPAR. The appropriate virtual MAC will be added, used on those packets. With virtual MAC, PriRouter, SecRouter, non-router have no meaning. They do not apply anymore. Because now every packet arriving has a unique MAC address on it for each LPAR, so the OSA just forwards directly to that target LPAR. There are a couple of other keywords added with this facility that do a similar function. The route all and route local. In this case, route all says, send up any packet, any frame that arrives with my virtual MAC on it, versus route local says, only send up those with my virtual MAC that have an IP address I registered. Next page. And this shows the syntax of the specification on the link statement. And you see the MAC address is optional. So if you just specify the VMAC keyword with no MAC address, a unique one will be created by the OSA for use for this LPAR. Next page. Here, assuming every one of the LPARs on this system has VMAC specified, all the packets that are going to be targeted to LPAR X will be arriving at the OSA with LPAR 3's virtual MAC on them. So it'll always go through LPAR 3 directly to LPAR X. Another side effect, the service manager that we discussed earlier with Sysplex Distributor, does not need to use the GRE protocol. Here, again, the routers, Cisco's routers, will know that a given connection is to be targeted to an individual LPAR. So it looks up that target LPAR's address, will know that via ARP protocol what MAC address is unique to it, which is the virtual MAC, not the OSA's MAC. Sending it out to OSA on the network, the OSA sees it because it knows it's one of the virtual MACs that it handles and forwards it to the correct LPAR without GRE wrapping. Next page is summary. I've intended in this presentation to cover understanding of how OSA performs routing of inbound packets for LPARs, particularly in the shared environment where multiple LPARs are sharing a single OSA, how it interacts with hypersockets via the IQDIO accelerator, and the interaction with some of the newer features. Page 32. Well, of course, when you talk about new features, you're also talking about what is the minimum software and hardware level associated with each. And I've listed them all here. I'm not going to go through them, except to note that the last one, Virtual Mac, these are associated with the newer Z9 processor options. I believe they call it the G3 processor. and the microcode levels that you need on the OSA to support these is 07.79 for our OSA Express, or 08.79 for OSA Express 2. And also note on there that this is only for gigabit Ethernet. The high-speed Ethernet does not support this. Next page. I noted on this page some good URLs for websites that you can use to access information about COM server or TCP/IP. Next page. And of course, here's some websites in general for WebSphere support and looking up information for all products associated from the software group in IBM. And now we're to a question and answer period.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. We will pause for just a moment. And there are no questions at this time. However, I would like to give everyone one final opportunity. That is star 1 on your touch tone telephone. And there are no questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Shigani, for any additional or closing remarks.
Hi, everyone. We usually do a e-conference polling question session, but because of the system being down today, we're going to be sending everyone an email with all the questions, and we hope that we can get your feedback based on the presentation and also any topics that you might be interested in listening to in the upcoming months. At this time, we would like to conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Ray, for presenting today.
This concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.